All right, let's do this.
All right, this is Decibel sitting down with Jay the Ripper. I'm really excited to be here tonight.
Thanks for having me here, dude.
Why don't you introduce yourself, Jay?
My name's Jared. I go by the name Jay the Ripper on the forums, on the internet. I've been in the game for about 2 years, a little bit over 2 years. And I founded the Casanova Crew, which is pretty much like the Southern California lair. And we host monthly seminars. We have weekly meetings and pretty much the biggest lair that I know of anywhere.
So first of all, let me get a little bit of your spiel, like what you were doing before the community, who you were. Give me a little glimpse of Jay the Ripper before the game and since.
Well, I got into this stuff 2 years ago, and before that, pretty much nothing was going on. I was 28 years old, and I was with this girl who, at that time, I thought I had no business being with. I mean, she was just totally hot, and that was the first girlfriend I had in a long time. We're talking like maybe 10 years. So at this time, I'm 28, and from the time I was 18 to 28, basically nothing went on. I was living in my bedroom, drinking every night alone, smoking weed, watching Japanese pro wrestling, downloading torrents. Nothing was going on, man. My only social life was pretty much going to the gym on Friday and Saturday night. I was in a couple punk rock bands before that, you know, and that went on for a couple year stretch, but nothing too consistent. You know, it was off and on, so basically, I was just alone. No friends, nothing, no social life, no hope of ever meeting any girls. And getting pretty suicidal by that point. I was, you know, 28 years old, and I was thinking, you know, what the fuck's going on? My job sucked. I didn't like waking up in the morning and dealing with life. And pretty much I thought I was done. I was kind of hoping, you know, something would happen to me and I would just get snuffed off. So anyways, I was with this girl, and I was with her for a few months. And she was older than me. She was 34 years old. She was divorced, and she had a 14-year-old daughter, and she had all these experiences that I didn't have, and I just felt really inadequate, right? So I was always trying to compete, trying to be this guy who I thought she needed. Her ex-husband was a Marine and, you know, did a tour of Iraq and all this shit, and, you know, I didn't really have any experiences aside from being in my bedroom for 10 years not doing shit. So anyways, that went bad, and she broke up with me. And I was really depressed. I mean, I was already pretty bad before, and just this was like the last straw, right? So I went on the internet, and I typed in how to keep the girl you know you're losing, and I saw all this shit pop up, a lot of David D'Angelo stuff, who I recognize because, actually, people don't really know this. I haven't really mentioned it before, but I first discovered the community was back in, like, 2002 by accident. I was looking at some sites, and there was a David D'Angelo email sign-up thing where he would send you the daily tips of the day. So I put my email in there, and he would send me these things pretty much every other day for years and years, but I would never read them. It would just go to my junk mail. But I recognized the name David D'Angelo, so I never really dug into the community and, you know, found out about forums and different pickup artists and things like that. So when this happened with this girl, I remembered, oh, yeah, David D'Angelo, and then I saw the results on the internet for my search, and I was like, oh, okay, cool, this sounds familiar. So I went overboard, man. I downloaded everything I could possibly find, and back in 2006 when I got into this, there wasn't really too much material out. I mean, there was stuff out there, but it was actually realistic that you could listen to everything if you took the time to. But now, I mean, it's impossible. There's so much shit. Every Johnny Come Lately is putting out their products and ebooks and, you know, interview series. No offense, Decibel. But, so anyways, back then I read everything, man. I put everything on my iPod. I'd go to work, to the gym, whatever, and I would just obsess over pickup and listen to everything from David D'Angelo, Real Social Dynamics, whatever Style was doing at the time, the Mystery Method series, everything. I read ebooks. I didn't go out, though. I was like the biggest keyboard jockey. I would just read stuff up and think, at some point I'm going to read so much that I'll know that I'm ready to go out and actually apply it. So that went on for about 6 months until I actually had the balls to go out there and apply it. So that's my background.
That's pretty sad, but hopeful, because how has your life been since you created Casanova Crew?
Well, actually, somebody was asking me this the other day, and I was watching this thing on the Discovery Channel about parallel universes and alternate realities, and they were saying something to the effect of, you know, like maybe 98% of every single reality you live in, it might be somewhat basically the same thing where, you know, you wake up, you go to work, and it's pretty much the same shit. It might vary a little bit here and there, and then every now and then there's like the bizarro world reality, and that's what I feel that I'm living in right now. So by the time I was 28, I had two lays, which I had just accidentally, I guess. They just kind of tripped and fell on my dick. Now I've been in the game for 2 years. I've been at it pretty consistently. I've been with 24 different girls. So, I mean, I know it's not like a whole bunch compared to some of these crazy beasts out here in Casanova crew, but that's way more than I ever thought I'd ever be with, you know? So I'm happy with that. And I go out to clubs now where I never did before. Just the thought of me being in a nightclub would kind of freak me out, or it's kind of ridiculous, you know, but now that's what I do. I promote clubs and all, so.
So aside from all the girls that you've gotten, what about all the other aspects of your outlook on life and your personality?
Oh, everything's changed, man, and I want to make clear, too, that what I'm saying right now is what I believe as of now. A year ago, I was thinking totally different, and a year from now, I might, you know, change my philosophy also. But as of now, it's been pretty much the single most important thing that's ever happened to me in my life was discovering the pickup community and self-improvement. Without it, I don't know if I'd even still be around. It's changed everything, not just girls or my social life. My career also, I was working in customer service for years, just like making shit money, you know, $8-9 an hour. And now, you know, it influenced me or inspired me to go ahead and change careers. I went back to school. I'm trying to go for my degree in computers, networking, IT, and that's what I do right now. So within the span of 2 years, I totally switched my career, my social life, my relationships with women. Pretty much I've had to create a whole new identity from scratch, and it's been really difficult. I'm still in the transition period. It's really hard to get used to, you know, after being a certain way for so long and being conditioned to avoid certain things, and now I'm kind of jumping into them head first. So, yeah, a lot of changes, man. Still changing.
I guess I'd speak for a lot of guys in the crew that we're all really thankful for everything that you've done. You've really changed a lot of lives. I don't know if you realize this.
You know, when I hear stuff like that, I don't know how to react, dude. I'm just kind of still focused on myself and trying to improve. When I hear stories about other guys coming into this stuff where that were in the same spot I was and they're going through the same process, I feel like we're all in this together in a way. I don't really feel like I'm qualified to teach or instruct or anything like that about pickup or about any other area of self-improvement. I'm just still working on myself. And 2 years is really nothing. I mean, that's just, you know, this is starting out. That's the way I see it. But I'm glad that I did form this community here, this, you know, subculture that we have going on. I think it's awesome. We have over 1,000 members right now. We have 5 different chapters of the Casanova crew, and, you know, in L.A., Orange County, Las Vegas, Long Beach, and Inland Empire, and we're going to form one in San Diego pretty soon, too. So it's been amazing just the way everything's just happened and evolved, you know, within such a short amount of time. And we have pretty big-name speakers coming down to our seminars once a month, so it's pretty awesome.
Yeah, I think they're going to, I heard they're going to put one on the moon, which means we're going to beat Starbucks, which I'm really surprised.
Yeah, that's next, man, so we'll see.
So, Casanova crew is known as the anti-layer. So what exactly is a Casanova versus a pickup artist?
Well, getting back to the anti-layer thing, there's layers all around the country, all over the world, and from what I've seen, from what I've heard, they're just managed really badly, where guys just meet up once a month, they kind of dick around and toss ideas around, and, you know, they might go out every now and then. They go to a club and just kind of sit around, and I don't want to generalize and say that all the layers are that way, but for the majority, that's the stigma they have. A lot of the speakers that we've had come by here to speak for us, they kind of shy away from layers. They're scared of layer guys. The layer community has, like, a really bad connotations to it, I guess, of guys that just don't do shit. And when I got into Casanova crew, when I formed it, my goal was to not do that. I wanted to meet once a week versus once a month, and I wanted the meetings to be productive, where we would totally just attack our sticking points, whatever it is that we needed to, you know, accomplish in the game, where we felt we were at, where we wanted to go, and just helping each other out and going out as much as possible. So I really wanted to, I guess, implant in everyone's head that we had to, you know, talk about this stuff once a week for 2 hours and have, like, a roundtable discussion, and then go out immediately afterwards and go out Friday and Saturday night also, and more times if we could during the week and just go out there and just repetition and just through that learning and becoming better people or, you know, better at pickup. Now, the difference between being a Casanova and a pickup artist, from what I, you know, what I've seen is I think a PUA is very ingrained in material and technique and a real detachment from the way things really should be, more, I guess, like on a deeper, real level, as opposed to trying to be like a manipulator or trying to, you know, trick women into bed with all these, you know, fancy methods and stuff like that. I think a Casanova is more genuine and is truly trying to not only better himself, but the people that come in contact into his life. So I think that's the main difference. A lot of us here in the crew are kind of shying away from, I guess, like the traditional method of pickup, you know, step one, step two, and things like that. We go out so much, we kind of discovered that on our own, that it wasn't really the way things are. We've, you know, discovered on our own also that a lot of it's marketing, a lot of guys just want to put out ebooks and DVDs, and they'll fill up all this time just to, you know, give you their spiel and stuff like that. So we've found out that there's a lot more to it than that, and it's more connecting with people on a more real level versus kind of putting this facade on.
So there's a lot of inner game involved, and I had read that inner game is a lot of, you know, bullshit. It is, right?
That's funny, man. No, actually, inner game, I think it's really important. I mean, if you don't have that within you, you can still go out there and memorize these tactics and routines and still get results, but then at the end of the day, let's say you go out with her again or, you know, have another interaction with her down the road, you're going to run out of stuff eventually. You're going to run out of your bag of tricks. And I think inner game, as long as you're comfortable with yourself and your position in life and how you feel about, you know, her and the relationship, that's what's going to matter the most. That's what's going to pull you through and give you the strength, and also give you the strength to go through anything where, let's say, it doesn't work out. Like with me 2 years ago when my girl, you know, dumped me, I didn't have any inner game. I was just totally depressed. My whole self-esteem depended on whether or not she liked me. So I think if you're not comfortable with yourself first, and inner game is just like another marketing gimmick, another tactic, you know, another I guess like a term that people can sell and put into a package. Really what I think it is just being happy with your situation in life and, you know, having positive people around you and just trying to be the best person you can be. So once you have that foundation, all the other stuff just comes naturally.
Okay, let's talk about your writing, because you're really well known for being a very talented writer. What's the value of writing field reports and lay reports in one's development?
You know, when I first started writing field reports, I didn't really know that I had a talent for writing. I'd kind of messed around before. Back in my high school days, I used to write for pro wrestling magazines and do arena reports and things like that. English class was always my best subject. I'd always write short stories, but I never really took it far. I never took it seriously. I never thought that I'd be a writer or anything like that. So when I first started writing my field reports, people started noticing them more than, I guess, the other reports, and it was really surprising to me. Like, the first one I wrote, I remember I wrote it, and I guess we all go through this where we write up a field report and then go back and see who replied, you know, hit a F5 or whatever, refresh. Did anybody reply? How many hits do I have? So I got stuck in that phase. And then I remember one time my third report that I wrote, I went to school or something. You know, there was like a 4-hour gap in between me writing it and posting it and then checking it again. When I came back, I had like 100 hits and I had like all these replies. And I was like, you know, oh, wow, that's kind of cool. And the next one I wrote, I had, you know, double that within a shorter amount of time. And I thought, you know what, I'm going to start cross-posting these on different forums and, you know, see if I get the same result. I was just kind of feeding my own ego, watching all these replies and views and stuff like that. And people, like, for the first time really complimenting my writing, which is, you know, if you read my stuff, it's more like mini short stories, like little novellas, I guess you could say, based on what happened, but the way I write it makes it interesting. And, you know, it's been compared to kind of Quentin Tarantino kind of, you know, shock writing and things like that. So back then, 2006, field reports were really standard. They would start off FR, colon, the date, and the venue you went to. And that's pretty much the way they all looked all across the forums that were around at that time. And what I started doing was I used to put outlandish, crazy titles on them, like Fucking the Deaf Girl, or The Mexican MILF from the Morgue, or I Grabbed Her Pigtails While She Puked, and just stuff like that, you know? And just for the, you know, for the shock value, I wanted people to click on them, but then I can back it up with the actual content of the report, so it wasn't all just, you know, the flashy titles. And I started noticing, maybe about 3 months into doing this, other people started copying my format with the intro. I would start off my stories, like, in the middle of the story with the cliffhanger, and then, like, kind of leave people hanging, and then go into the beginning of the story, and do a whole bunch of little writing tricks like that to make it more interesting to get the reader through it, because my stuff was pretty long. And so, yeah, a lot of copycats after that. Then I started noticing that the FR colon date venue started going away. Now it was all crazy titles, and that's pretty much the standard now. So, I mean, I know people wrote that way before me and, you know, around the same time that I did, but it wasn't as consistent as it is now. Now it's pretty much the standard where everybody wants to have their stuff read. So I started developing, I guess you could say, like a little mini cult following around my reports. Within 9 months, my reports were pretty much known all over the place, and I got asked to speak at a few seminars based on the popularity of my reports and stuff like that. So now 2 years later, I've written probably over 60 of them, and I'm just glad people read them and enjoy them.
All right, One thing that's been interesting to me, I've been doing some research in his presence, and like Jay the Ripper has presence, other guys like Ulysses, you walk into the room and they know this is El Jefe. Is this sort of a trait that you've always had, or is it something that you've developed?
I'd say I've always had it, but for different reasons. I guess before it was just for like looking totally awkward and like a doofus, you know? I'd walk into the room and it would be like, you know, who the fuck is this guy? I was really shy. Whenever I was in big crowds, I'd always be quiet. So I guess I would stand out just by my non-involvement in society or wherever I was at in class. You know, I was always the shy guy in the back, and everybody knew it. You know, I'd get shit thrown at me, or if I'd walk in late, all eyes were on me one way or the other. So now it's just, that was a big part of my life the way I was, and I still feel that way sometimes when I do come into a room or if I have to speak at a seminar. It never really goes away, but, you know, it's only been 2 years, so I'm getting better at it.
If somebody wants to develop their presence, what specific advice would you give as far as, like, subcommunications, body language, eye contact, that sort of thing?
I think to purposely create a presence, I think it's really hard because I'm not really sure what I did to, you know, because right now you're saying, oh, you know, how do you get this presence? And, you know, I haven't really heard that in those words before like that. I think I'm just comfortable coming in here now. I know all of you guys. I feel more comfortable talking on stage. I feel more like, okay, you know, I've done this before. It's routine. You know, here I am. I make sure to greet everybody. I guess that's what I do. Like a lot of people mention is whenever I go to a club or one of these gatherings, I make sure to shake everybody's hand, make everybody feel welcome. If anybody's not talking or kind of the way I was back then, I make sure to, you know, go up to them and say, hey, dude, you know, come over here and meet these guys. And I want everybody to genuinely get along and be friends and feel comfortable being around each other. And I think when I come in, maybe if the tone of the room's a little off, you know, some guys are kind of standoffish or playing Mr. Cool Guy. When I come in, it's like, you know, fuck all that. We're all part of this thing together. We're all family. And I think they'll all recognize it and they know that's what I'm about.
Cool. Okay, so let's talk about your game, or if you want to call it game. But things go down pretty quick. You're very aggressive in field, and you're well known for your quick makeouts. Mm-hmm. I'm assuming you're not sitting there counting indicators of interest. When you get to three, you go from A1 to C1. I mean, what's going on in the first few minutes of your average interaction?
Well, when I first started out, any girl who would talk to me, I was just happy that I was able to have an interaction and keep it going for more than a few minutes and stuff like that. As I got more into this, the quality of girls that I was actively seeking got better. And now, like, I only go after what I want. So I only go after a girl who I'm genuinely attracted to. And there's other cool girls that I've met who I'm not attracted to, but they end up being good friends, and I, you know, get their numbers anyway and talk to them about, you know, whatever music or movies or whatever else we had in common when we met. So what I do is when I see a girl that I like, in my head, I got to be really sincere with myself. Like, do I actually like this girl? Because there's girls that you want to fuck. You see them, and it's like, oh, you know, she's pretty hot. But then every now and then, there's, like, that one girl that's like, you know, wow, that's a pretty hot girl, you know. Those are the ones I want to go after, like the true prizes in the club, not just any. Because, I mean, there's, like, hundreds of beautiful girls out there, but I want to meet the one who I think, I guess based on looks first, you know, that I think would have the most potential to, you know, be somebody that I want to see after the club and stuff like that. So I guess I start off with that. I make sure that I'm genuinely attracted to her. And once I feel that I really like her, I guess her views towards me are kind of irrelevant. You know, like even if she doesn't like me at first, the way I come in, my personality, my presence, like you were saying, I guess, it's so overwhelming that my sheer will of wanting her, it kind of overpowers whatever objection she might have initially. And it doesn't always happen that way, but that's what I try to go for, and that's what I've seen that's pretty consistent for me, is that I'm able to plow and go in there right away and kind of filter out who's a potential same night lay or somebody who I might want to see later on versus who really doesn't like me and I shouldn't waste my time with. So, you know, I give it my best shot. I go in there and try whatever I can. I try to get to know her. I try to be genuine, and if it's not happening, then, you know, I mean, what are you going to do? You can't really be there all night trying to beat a dead horse.
Yeah, it seems like the guys that get really good at this are really living in their own reality, and I hear that word irrelevant a lot. Like, they're just pretty much doing their own thing, and whether the girl is, like, responding positively is almost irrelevant. He's going to continue doing what he wants to do.
There's been a few girls who I've approached who I could have sworn had no interest in me at all. I mean, I'd go in there and I'd talk to them and they're really non-responsive, kind of quiet, kind of giving me the look like, you know, get the fuck out of here. Or even at work too, there was a couple of girls who did that. And come to find out later on either, well, I'll give you an example. This girl at work who, that was one of my first reports I wrote about, she didn't really seem too responsive to me at all. she was kind of shy, and, you know, I'd come in there, and I was practicing, you know, my routines and lines on her and stuff like that, and she wouldn't crack a smile. And one day, one of her friends came up to me and said, "Hey, Elizabeth is into you." She had a couple friends from her office come up to me and say, "Oh, yeah, Elizabeth thinks you're really cute, and she wants to, you know if you feel the same way." And I was like, "What? You know, no way. She's, like, so cold to me. I couldn't believe it." So that gave me confidence. If her friends are telling me that, I went into Elizabeth's office, and I just gamed the shit out of her the best I could back in, you know, mid-2007 or whatever. And she was totally into it. I got her number, and it was a totally different girl. So after that, it kind of changed my reality a bit. I was like, okay, so even if a girl doesn't show initial interest, you still go for it. You know, you give her an opportunity to give back that interest, whether it's, you know, asking for her number or trying to keep the interaction going and stuff like that. So if she's willing to give you just that much, then you should take that as a sign, if you need any signs, that she's into you and that you should continue going forward.
So how would you describe your style of escalation?
Well, for night game, I'm really aggressive. I mean, I don't want to say physically aggressive. I mean, I just my personality, the way that I am. If she's in a mixed set with guys in there, that's my favorite set to open, is with guys in there, because if you're able to come into a set with other dudes and easily just dominate, take over the conversation and lead it, the girl will notice that the other guys are kind of going along with it. And if you want to talk about you know, higher value or, you know, alpha males and stuff like that, that's pretty much what I'm trying to say, you know. So I go in there and I talk, I make sure that everybody's my buddy instantly, and I think they're impressed by that. My style of game is, I hate routines now. I used to do them a lot back in the day. I'm really lazy, I have a bad memory, I can't memorize nothing anymore. I used to take a lot of notes, and now it's just, I think after going out so much, you start building up this subconscious experience, I guess, where things just kind of happen. It's really hard to explain. I wish I can, you know, break down step by step exactly what I do, but I just feel a certain, like, comfortableness when I'm out there, where if I talk to a girl, I know more likely than not something good's going to happen, and if not, then I'm okay with that too. So I go in there, I'm direct. I'll express my interest right away. If I see a girl that's beautiful, I'll say, "You know what, I just had to meet you. Wow, look at you." And I'll kind of do it over the top also, so where it's not like, you know, I'm totally giving away my value. I'll kind of make like a little joke of it. And, you know, if you do want to talk routines, I guess the closest thing you can compare it to is, you know, the cocky funny. You know, you're giving her these compliments, but at the same time you're showing her that, you know, she's not really sure if you're serious or not. And, you know, you kind of give her that smile. So I do a lot of that stuff. When I get into the keynote, you know, I hold her hand right away. I try to lead her around the venue, different places. If she's with her friends, I'll ask the friends, "Hey, is it cool if I talk to your friend?" And just saying stuff like that's really impressive to girls, you know, I've been told later on. And, you know, I'll walk her somewhere else more private. And depending on what I want, if it's a girl that I feel that I want to continue with and, you know, maybe make something happen, I won't really start talking sexually right away. But if I feel that she's the type of girl that is down to have, like, a one-night stand and stuff like that, I'll get into the sexual talk right away, the makeouts, and try to pull her out of the club as soon as possible.
So, along those lines, what are the sort of the indicators you look for as to whether a girl is DTF?
Well, in one of my reports, which one was it, the how to make out with the girl in 5 minutes or less, the thing that always stays with me now that's really helped me out is the only indicator of interest you'll ever need is the fact that she's still there standing talking to you. If she hasn't walked away, if she hasn't made up an excuse to go back to her friends, if she hasn't said she has to go to the bathroom, whatever, if she hasn't left and if she's still standing there right next to you, you should take that as whatever you want to take it as, that she likes you, that she wants to fuck you, that she wants to make out with you. The only indicator of interest you need is that she's still there standing, listening to you. So as long as I have that, I feel I can take it different ways. If I want to pull her, I'll try for that. I'll express it. I'll say, "Hey, you know what, I'll pay for the hotel. Let's get out of here," you know, but it's the way that I say it, you know, it's not so... you know, "Hey, let's get out of here. Let's, you know, have the money. I'll get you." You know, I don't do that. You know, by this time I've already established some kind of rapport with her, some sort of a playful banter. Or this I create a situation for her where she can play a role and let her sexual side out to me. And once I see that, usually she'll be pretty down. I've had a lot of same night lays from the same venues, and it's basically always goes the same way. They usually happen within 20 minutes, and I can just pluck them and take them out. I make sure that all the contingencies are taken care of. I let them know that, you know, I have my car here. I can take you home. You know, where do you live? I can bring you back here. Whatever possible things she can come up to object to my, you know, proposal to get out of there, I combat it with whatever she needs to hear to make it okay for her to go out with me.
How many, as far as makeouts, does it seem to solidify your pulls? Is it a prerequisite that you make out before the pull or even before you get a solid number?
I'd say the makeout, every time I've done a same night pull, there's always been a makeout before it. I've had way more makeouts than I've had lays. I mean, I've in the 2 years that I've been this, I have probably, I mean, I used to count every single one and be able to recite how I did each one, but now I've lost count, man. It's way over 300 for sure. And, I've noticed, you know, there's a thought that if you make out with the girl the same night you meet her, that it ruins your chances of being able to pull her. I haven't really seen that too much, I guess. It's kind of, it goes either way, you know. I've made out with girls and I've been able to pull them the same night, so you can't really say that's a universal rule.
Is there a secret to solidifying phone numbers? Because there's a lot of problems with flaking among, especially new guys.
Yeah, what I don't like about, you know, getting phone numbers or email addresses is there's a lot of a thought that, okay, when a guy goes in there, he should ask for the number a certain way or ask for the email a certain way in order for her to kind of manipulate her to give it to you, you know, like, you know, oh, let me have your email address. Oh, while you're at it, write down your number, too. I mean, stuff like that. If she likes you, if you've gamed her properly, there's no need to go in through the back door and try to do all these things. You know, if you ask her for her number and she likes you, she's going to give it to you. She'll give you her email address, and if she doesn't, then you haven't done enough work or she doesn't, you know, she's not receptive to your game. There's something maybe that you shouldn't work on. So, you know, I'll just ask her straight out, you know, what's your number? I've had interactions where everything goes perfect. I talk to her for an hour, I'm making out with her, I get her phone number, and I'm thinking this is a solid thing. And come the next day, she doesn't answer her phone, a flake, and I never hear from her again. You know, I might try to ping her later on through text message, and, you know, I might get some kind of response back, but she won't be down to go out or whatever. And then sometimes I'll talk to a girl for literally less than a minute. You know, I'll run my shit, make out with her, get her number, and think, oh, there's no way, and then that ends up being a fuck buddy for, you know, a year or two, you know. So it's really hard to gauge it. From my experience, I just, you know, I say go with what you feel. If the time's right to make out there, go for it. And like you were saying before, asking me about numbers and solidifying them, I would say there's really no way to really foolproof it. I mean, like I said, you can have an interaction with a girl for a long ass time, you guys have all the shit in common, and in the end, it fizzles out. So, you know, there's really no connection. It's a really a static, is that a static when things change?
No, dynamic.
Very dynamic? Okay, well, you would know. That's what I'm asking. But
yeah, exactly.
It's a real dynamic thing, man. It's really hard to predict. I just, again, I say go with what you feel, and that's the only the guide you need is, you know, just follow what you think is right at the time.
And just go for it. Just get the numbers.
Oh, yeah, definitely. A lot of guys are like, no, I'm going to wait for her to ask me my name or for her to ask me for my number. And that's a real, like, antiquated way of thinking about, you know, pickup and the stuff that we do here. I say, if you like her, express your interest. She likes it. It shows balls to tell a girl that you like her. As long as it doesn't come from a position of weakness, as long as you come from a position of you go after what you want and you're aggressive about it, then she'll respect that whether she's attracted to you or not. And maybe she'll even give you her number if she's not attracted and become attracted later on, you know, through the course of your relationship with her.
All right, so let's talk about, like, the some of the you know, you've written a lot of crazy stuff. You've had a lot of crazy experiences in field. So what would you say are, like, your top story, if you can find one that, like, really blew your reality away, or was your craziest, ballsiest thing you've done? And there have been a lot, so I know it's a hard question.
Yeah, it is. The first one that comes out is when I first got into this stuff, you hear about bathroom pools and, you know, fucking girls in back of alleys. You know, Brad P's real famous for stuff like that. And I used to think, you know, what a bunch of bullshit. I mean, who's going to, you know, fuck a girl in the bathroom? That's insane, you know, who does that? But going out to the clubs, I noticed it's like, you know, I'd see other guys do it. And these girls weren't drunk. They were just horny. They wanted to fuck, and there was the bathroom. And, you know, I saw it happen a few times, and it was still kind of outside of my reality. I was like, wow, I mean, that'll never happen to me. That's like the ultimate of pickup parlor tricks, is being able to pull a girl into the bathroom, right? So I was in the game for about, I'd say a little bit over a year, and I met this girl over in Irvine. I forget the name of the club. Was it Kimura or something? One of our guys, Lucky, was the DJ there. So we're hanging out there in the smoking patio, and within a couple minutes, I'm making out with this girl, and I'm, you know, guiding her around the club and whatnot. And I noticed at the bathroom, there was no attendant in there. Usually, there's always, like, a guy in there giving you towels and stuff like that, and there was nobody in the bathrooms, you know? So I told her, you know what, I want to take you into the bathroom. And it was the first time I'd ever, you know, asked anybody that, you know, in pickup. I just thought it was kind of far-fetched, but I thought, hey, you know what, she's receptive, you know, I have her down on this couch, she's not talking to her friends, I didn't drive here, so I can't take her home, and I don't know what her situation is. And I said, you know, let's go to the bathroom. She's like, okay, let's go. she went in there with me. You know, we closed the door behind us, and, you know, we took off her clothes, and, you know, about 5 minutes later, this big-ass Russian security guy comes into the bathroom, starts knocking on the door. What the fuck are you guys doing in there? Get the hell out. Apparently, her friends had seen us go in there together, and they got a little worried after a while and decided to go snitch. So me and her both got kicked out. Went around the club. Her friends stayed in there for some reason. I don't know if they noticed when we got kicked out or not. We went around the corner and stuff, and we sat down, and I'm all, you know, finger-banging her, and people are walking by. And by then, you know, I had a couple drinks, and, you know, she might have had a couple, too. We weren't wasted by any means, but we were both feeling good and stuff. So there I am, you know, finger-banging her, putting my finger in her ass, and all this crazy-ass shit, and there's, like, people coming into the club late, and we don't care. We're just kind of going for it, you know. And then eventually her friends do come out and separate us, and the security guy came out again, and they chased me off. And there was, like, probably 10 Casanova guys there that were trying to, you know, fuck with the security guy, you know, mad at him for trying to break up me and the girl. And so that's one of the craziest things, you know, I've experienced, the fabled bathroom pool, I guess. I've had I know a lot of guys have had, you know, three-way makeouts and stuff like that, but, you know, my first one was, you know, meant a lot. I was like, wow, you know, that's what kind of blew my reality, too. There was a girl, my fuck buddy, had a birthday, and she had all of her friends come down and stuff like that. And I promoted the club, so, you know, I got them the bottle service and whatnot. And one of her friends, I liked her, you know, I thought she was cute. And, you know, it's totally bad. I shouldn't have even have gone for her because, you know, she's my fuck buddy's friend. And even though I'm not with her, there's still that, you know, I mean, she's at the club. I got her the table, and it's known that I'm kind of with her and stuff like that. So I went up to the friend, ran my game, and started making out with her within, you know, 3 minutes. I took her by the hand, took her to the smoking patio in the VIP section of Vanguard, where it's closed off, went in there, and the guy that I mentioned earlier, JJ Lucky, he had brought two girls with him, and she came in there to have a smoke and saw me and this girl making out, and I told her, come over here and have a seat next to us. And we start bullshitting, and I try to get them into it, like, a lesbian situation. I'm like, so have you guys ever kissed a girl before? And they start laughing, like, no, no. And I kept, you know, pushing it and instigating, come on, you guys are chicken, whatever. And they start making out in front of me. And I grab both of their heads, and we start making out together, all three of us. And I'm like, holy fuck, I gotta take some pictures, you know? So I pull out my BlackBerry and start, you know, flashing some pictures and stuff. So, you know, that was pretty crazy. Man, there's been a lot of shit. I guess a lot of the same night lays that I've had are pretty crazy. I don't know, man. I'm kind of a blank here. Those are so much shit. Can you think of any of the stuff that I've written?
The two girls with one condom is one of my favorites.
Oh, yeah. Fuck. So there was this fuck buddy that I had, and I'd had sex with her probably 3 times before that, and she lives way far away from me. I live close to San Bernardino, and she lives over in North Hollywood. And one night I was partying out in Orange County with some of my wings, reading over at Norm's, and I get a text from her, you know, asking if I wanted to come over, and I was like, oh, shit. So anyways, I go down there, and she's there with her friends, and they were just coming back from a club, too, also. So, I mean, I hauled ass down there. I must have made it from Orange County, North Hollywood in, you know, 30 minutes or so, you know. So I get there, and I meet her friends and stuff like that, and my fuck buddy says she has to go take a shower. She's like, I'll be right out, you know, just come out here, you know, just talk to my friends for now. I'm like, okay. So she goes in there and takes her shower, and then her friend, the little one, was in the kitchen, and they had just come back from Taco Bell. And she asked me, oh, do you want a burrito or, you know, this and that? And I wasn't hungry. I was just there to, you know, fucking leave. So I forget exactly what I said to the friend, but I started making out with her in the kitchen within seconds. And I tell her, after I get done with your friend, you're next. And I felt like such a scumbag saying those words, you know, because that's like, you know, if you would have known me before this stuff, I mean, I was just the most respectful guy or whatever when it came to women. And just saying stuff like that, those words coming out of my mouth kind of disgusted me. I'm like, you know, what the fuck am I saying, you know? So anyways, I go in there and I fuck the girl, my fuck buddy, after she got out of the shower. And we were in her bedroom for about at least an hour. And when I came out, I noticed I still had the condom on. I didn't take it off because I was, you know, I was late. You know, I was lazy and shit. I don't know what the fuck's going on. I'm just tired. And when I leave, when I close the door behind me and my fuck buddy's still inside, you know, on the bed. And I see her friend come around the corner, you know, around the living room. She was still waiting for me this whole time. She didn't leave. And I'm like, okay, you're next. Let's go. I'm like, where do you live? She's like, oh, I live kind of far, you know, and this and that. So I'm like, fuck it, I'll give you a ride home. I knew it was going to be an experience that I probably wouldn't have for a long time, you know, if ever. So I thought I had to take advantage of it. So I'm driving with her, and I still have my fucking condom on, you know, and I'm all going soggy in there and shit. So I get to her place, and we go in there, and I fuck her with the same condom that I fucked her friend with. So I had two girls in the same night, both best friends.
And those condoms will stay on a very long time, won't they?
Yeah, it's you know, here's a little endorsement for Vince Kelvin brand condoms. They fucking work and they stay on like a motherfucker. So hit up Vince for those.
That's awesome. And you should be reading all of his stories because they're really incredible, mind blowing things, and they're all true. You don't fabricate anything in your.
You know, I can't really afford to, man. Whenever I go out, I hang out with at least 10, 15 Casanova crew guys, if not more. If I was to exaggerate even one thing, I'd have guys calling me out on it. You know, all the guys in the crew are good, but just like whenever you get a bunch of guys together, there's always going to be a competition and, you know, shit talking and stuff like that. And I can't even exaggerate one thing because someone's going to say something to somebody else, and I make my shit as true to the truth as possible because I know that, you know, there's people around me watching. If you read a lot of my reviews, there's guys that have, you know, seen me, you know, pull girls out of the club or, you know, get the makeouts or whatever. So I'm not really in a position. I don't have the luxury to fabricate my stories because I would get called out on it in a second.
And you are a promoter. You've been working hard at this every weekend. So how does being a promoter help your game? Is there a certain style that you've adopted as a result?
Not as much as you'd think. I remember reading a lot of these e-books and stuff like that. They talk about if you become a club promoter, that you're going to have all this pussy all the time, all this social value and stuff like that. And I've been promoting for about a year, and I've seen some of it, I guess, but not to the point where you'd think that being a promoter would get you all this pussy. So, yeah, you know, every now and then if I'm talking to a girl and I'll mention, yeah, you know, I promote here, you know, what's your number? I'll put you on my guest list. I guess that has some kind of prestige. And even if nothing happens with her, you know, she'll call me back and, you know, want to bring her friends down and, you know, I kind of hook them up that way. But as far as me just being a promoter and getting laid off of that alone, I haven't really seen it myself.
All right. Well, we have El Topo coming tonight to speak to the crew, so I wanted to wrap it up really quickly. Any other final thoughts? I know you come from let me just ask you, you come from a punk background. Has that influenced, you know, who you are as a man or as a playa?
When I got into punk rock, you know, I've always been antisocial. I've never liked talking to people. I hate big crowds. You know, back then, before pickup, being alone in my room, that was fine with me. Now, I still have a lot of that in me. And, you know, a lot of punk rock is, you know, antisocial. A lot of the content, lyric-wise and stuff like that, a lot of people in it are, you know, anti-government and this and that. And I was never, you know, to that extreme, but I knew sincerely I didn't like people. I didn't want to be around them in school or otherwise or any other situation. So I've kind of carried a lot of that over with me. I still have a lot of anger from, you know, growing up and stuff like that. As far as, you know, punk rock or antisocial fitting into my pickup stuff, if anything, I've been trying to go away from being antisocial. A lot of me still is. I don't know if I can ever really shake that completely. But like I said, I've had to create a whole new identity from scratch, and part of that involves being more social, being more outgoing, which is the opposite of what I was doing before. So if anything, I guess I use it as a barometer to find out how far I am away from that, if anything.
And what is the website for Casanova Crew?
It's CasanovaCrew.com. It's a message forum, nothing flashy. We don't have any banners or anything like that. We have different sections for... you know, you can write your field reports, you can write down any tips or techniques you might have or give other guys advice. We have a section for inner game. We have an irrelevant section where it's just off-topic stuff where a lot of crazy shit gets posted on there. We have a private section for each individual, a Sarge crew. I mentioned before we're out in different cities and stuff like that. So it's basically a resource to learn about pickup, post your questions, any concerns you have, any advice you want to give back, and it kind of, you know, continues our community within Casanova Crew. It helps guys keep in touch and meet up, you know, find wings and things like that. You find out about venues, you introduce yourself on there, and guys, you know, reply to that, and, you know, they bring you out if you're a newbie. So it's a really awesome environment that we've created, and it's taken a lot of hard work, and, you know, 2 years, it's gotten this big. You know, I have no idea how big it's going to get, but I'm going to try to keep it the same with the same philosophy where it's as free as possible and where everyone's here to help each other out and, you know, keep going and improving ourselves.
Yeah, it really is an amazing thing. It is truly a subculture, and it's just taken off here, and it's still underground, but, I mean, as far as crews go, it's probably the biggest or second biggest in the world, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, absolutely. I belong to this Yahoo group that's run by Forum Handle where all the members are layer leaders around the world, and from what I've seen, I'd say if we're not the biggest, we are in the top three, definitely. Our turnouts are phenomenal. We're having like 100 people show up every month. And I know there's another seminar in Florida called the 21 Convention, And I've talked to a few of the instructors who have gone down there to talk, and they say that, you know, they draw pretty big crowds, but not on a monthly basis like we do, which is pretty phenomenal because a lot of coaches have trouble even getting, you know, a handful of people to come hear them talk. And us, you know, we're breaking our attendance record almost every month out. So we have over 100 people that come down to these seminars once a month, and each crew has at least 30 core members. Altogether, we have over 1,000 members on the forum. So we are pretty active. We all know each other, too, which is pretty awesome, you know. We're not just, like, nameless, you know, whatever handles on the internet. We all know each other by our names and stuff. So, and we're all buddies. We hang out. We don't just go out to the clubs. You know, we help each other out. If some guy has to move, we help him move. We get the U-Haul truck and, you know, help him pack up. If a guy needs medical advice, you know, they have Decibel here. So everybody in the crew has their talents. They have their strong points, not related to pickup, and we all kind of help each other out and share our talents and skills.
Right. It's a real brotherhood. So if you want more information, come to PUA Field Guide or visit Casanova Crew. And thanks a lot, Jay.
Thanks for having me on, dude.